Hi, I'm Tyra G., your host for Frankly Speaking with Tyra G. Welcome back to your virtual global gathering of phenomenal women and those who love you. Yes, you, mothers, daughters, grand and great-grandmothers, who are fearsome and generous, humble and honest, in pursuit of new possibilities and purpose. We are digging deep and we're coming up strong. For new listeners, our theme this month is This Is Us. We're getting acquainted with the diversity around our table. Although much of what happens to women has universal melodies, it's how we put our notes together that sets us apart. This is where we discover our gifts, our needs, our successes, our desires. Sharing melodies will touch every season of life. For 1 hour every week, we will be involved with topics selected by you. Yeah, I said you. Those topics will be both relevant to and resonate with who we all are. I love the fact that you're reaching out to me at Tyra@TyraGarlington.com. And I hear you. The request has been made that we continue with our theme, This Is Us, for another month. You're enjoying the wonderful and encouraging stories of your sister friends. We will do just that. And we'll come back from time to time and throughout the year. Each week, one of you has been blessing us with your authenticity and courage. You have taken your conversations from head to head, to heart, to spirit, and one of you brought along your son for some serious mother-son dialogue. I loved it. Together, we'll continue to bravely walk into places where tradition has taught us there's some things we just don't talk about. But not at this table. And no matter how hard judgment knocks, it will not get in. Beloved ladies, here at this table, we live beyond the wreckage. You're listening to Radio Fairfax, Fairfax, Virginia, on your TV, computer, or mobile device. We are webcast also worldwide on the internet at www.radiofairfax.org. And each week, if you miss our show, no worries. You can catch up with us through our weekly podcasts on our YouTube channel, Frankly Speaking with Tyra G. I can't brag enough about our theme song, which was composed and is being performed by Mr. Courtney Nero, my favorite saxophone player and my dear friend. Courtney was so happy that my dream of my radio show was coming true, he wanted to add a blessing of a special soundtrack. He named our song, I'm Listening, which is the perfect match to the name of the show, Frankly Speaking with Tyra G. I can call the result a perfect example of awesome sauce. Thanks, Courtney. I like to begin each show by creating a mood and giving us a virtual common space to inhabit while we're together. By now, you know one of my favorite ways of doing that is to ask a question. And one of my favorite questions is, what if? Because it has no boundaries and it's pregnant with possibilities. I love this week's question. It flips a paradigm of how we usually think about self-love. This week, the question is, what if you internalized the truth that you were loved by life? Let me repeat now. What if you internalized you were loved by life? Not that you love life, but that life loved you. What might happen? Well, I'm glad you asked. I turn again to my inspirational fountain of wisdom, Miss Ayanna VanZant, from her book, Until Today, and I walk into her words as I quote, listen carefully as if someone were whispering into your soul. There's something you must know. It's very important. No, it's imperative that you receive these words into the deepest core of your being. These words are essential to your very existence. They will feed, nurture, and nourish you. When all else fails, these words will give you the strength and the courage you need to weather the storm and walk through the fire. These are simple words, yet very powerful. If you can accept them in the spirit in which they're given, you're going to be blessed. Guess what? Life loves you. Life loves you enough to live as you, to breathe through you, to express itself as you. Life loves you so much, it does everything in its power to stay in you, to be with you, and to allow you to depend on it. Life is, at this very moment, totally and absolutely in love with you. Life wants to look like you, live like you, be like you, live as you, because it respects and honors who you are. When life sees you coming, it gets all excited. It can hardly contain itself. Life is ready to fill you up, spill over through you, and experience the best it has to offer, just as you. If you were to ask life, what is it about you that makes you so lovable? The answer would be simple. You're alive. This is all it takes to make you loved, loving, and lovable. Now, isn't that good to know you're loved? Until today, you may have realized just how much life loves you, may not have realized just how much life loves you. You may have believed that life was not on your side. I get that. But just today, just for today, be devoted to honoring, cherishing, and enjoying life's love for you. Sit quietly and ask life to fill you with its love. Your affirmation for today is, today I'm devoted to allowing life to love me. Come on now, repeat after me. Today I'm devoted to allowing love to love me. And I enter quote. Now, with all that power of life's love in you, what can you do? I'm glad you asked. You can be resilient. That means you can be robust. You can be hardy. You can be tough. And this is our theme for our guest today, Miss Amelia Townsend. You will find that where Amelia grew up, they also call resilience mountain strong. After a break, we'll get to know about the place where resilience is also called mountain strong and meet some of its inhabitants through their stories. I thought Moonlight Sonata by Beethoven was an appropriate soundtrack for a love story. Stay tuned now. I have another what if question for you. What would you do if you had no home and no family? Where would you turn if every road ended at a brick wall? Sarah Bishop Hart, a small, gentle woman from the hills of Southwest Virginia, was born into a world without hope. When she was 5 years old, her father hired her out to a family she had never met. From that day, Sarah never knew a real home or what it was like to have a true family. She ate from table scraps, slept in outbuildings, and never felt welcome, no matter where she was. She lived with one fiercely held desire, to have a home of her own. When she married the man of her dreams, a half-breed with secrets of his own, Sarah thought she had realized her fantasy. Little did she know her troubles were just beginning. Keepsakes for the Heart sets the life of Sarah Bishop Hart against the mountains and the cool mines, the Great Depression and two world wars, the women's movement, and other upheavals of the 20th century. Sarah's simple mountain philosophy offers a lesson to anyone who has ever thought about giving up. Listen up now. You can be anything you want. You just have to be tough as an old pine knot. Trust God to take care of you and keep the good things in your heart. Pull them out to keep you going when times are bad. The author of the book Keepsakes of the Heart is in the studio with us today. By way of introduction, I'd like to read her bio. Shadowed and protected by the mountains of her native Southwest Virginia, Amelia Townsend has lived hither, thither, and yon, mostly between Virginia and North Carolina. She's worked as a newspaper and TV reporter, freelance producer and director, writer, and now PR hack. She has no claim to fame. Further, she is most bewildered when people say they're impressed by her work. Her favorite avocation is listening to and writing down other people's stories. For truth surely is stranger and more beautiful than fiction. That's where Townsend has found fodder for the stories of the hill that she wrote with her late writing buddy. Several have come to light in the form of a novel, from which I read, and a couple of plays in production. The names have been changed to protect the guilty. Townsend's wealth and riches blossom in her friends and her family, her joy in seeing them succeed in achieving their dreams. Her most impressive accomplishments are her children, a son and a daughter, who managed to turn into fine young adults despite her attempts to raise them. Welcome, Amelia Townsend. Thank you, thank you, thank you for saying yes and coming to be with me today.
Hi, Tyra. Thank you. And to talk about a dream, I'm getting to participate in your living your dream.
Yes.
And you are doing so with great splendor and great grace and great talent. So
thank you.
Thank you for having me.
I was excited when we had a conversation. You gave me this book to read, I think maybe when we first met years ago. And since then, I've gotten to know more about Southwest Virginia through you and your family and some of the plays. So why don't you kind of tell the audience what you mean when you say mountain strong?
Mountain strong is a kind of determination that an individual takes on when they are faced with great odds. And they look at those odds and they say, no matter what comes, we will survive. The person may be suffering from great depression, great pain, great illness, and yet they face these struggles head on. Someone else described it as unshakable in the face of a hurricane.
Well, I have a sense that mountain strong wasn't something, wasn't a term that you came up with.
Oh, no, no.
Where did
no,
that come no. from?
It came from my family. I mean, everyone from my home area typically describes themselves as, I'm tough. Uh-huh. Like Sarah did, I'm tough as an old pine knot.
Yes.
And anyone who knows anything about wood knows that pine knots can't be sawed through.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so that is one of the terms of art that is utilized to talk about someone's willpower and their willingness to face tough situations is, I'm an old mountain strong person.
Yeah, and when I think about Sarah, this is not a fantasy. This book is for real. And I want you to share how you got pieces of the book, how it came to you.
Sarah was a contemporary of my grandmother. They were raised and grew up in and around Wise County, Virginia, and Lee County. And when I came to write her story, it was part of a challenge from my dad.
Oh, okay.
And he had said, if you could write her story, you'll be a writer. I knew her. She was a sweet, wonderful, quiet, calm, precious little woman.
Uh-huh.
And I asked her if she would help me write her story. And she wrote 50 pages by pencil on the backs of old stationery from her daughter's office, all out of chronological order, just as she thought of them.
Uh-huh.
And she was the first one to change the names to protect the guilty.
Okay.
She gave everyone different names.
Okay.
Her story began with the sentence that you read there. My life as I remember it began when I was five.
Mm-hmm.
It was cold. My mother woke me up. It was dark. We lived on the mountain.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know where I was going, but she made me get dressed. She handed me a cold biscuit.
Oh, my.
And put on the only coat that I had, which was my dad's old shirt. And he told me I had to go. And I walked out in the dark, down the mountain, to the ferry.
Mm. Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, and I know you can do this because of your creativity. What was that like, that walk down the mountain for Sarah? What was she feeling or thinking? Can you get there?
Yeah. Sarah was terrified.
Uh-huh.
But she was more terrified to turn around.
Oh.
Because she had watched her father beat her mother senseless. She had seen her father's temper and ire when he would throw the family out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And so she walked in the dark, and there's lots of folklore in the mountains. There are haints and ghosts and panthers, which we call painters. There are... And then there's always rawhide and bloody bones. And so she was terrified. Mm-hmm. I asked her that question, and she said, there was no way to go back. It was less scary to keep moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
And then what she encountered at the bottom of the mountain was the ferry that was across, that went across the river to get her into the town. And who was on the ferry but an African-American man with his dinner bucket. And she'd never seen a stranger. And so she didn't know what to do, and he saw her, and she realized later as an adult that he was feeling sorry for her, and if he had could have found a way to do it, he would have taken her home to his wife and children. But he shared part of his lunch, which was cornbread, and he shared part of his meat with her to feed her, and that was the food she had for the next 3 days.
Sarah. Now, are we beginning to see resilience or Mountain Strong? She's young, but she's driven by something. She refuses to give up. What happened next?
She went into the town. She found the family with whom she was supposed to work. And when she arrived at the door and knocked on the door, the father was going out to go to the mine to work. He was a mine super, which meant he was essentially the god of the community. And he saw this tiny child standing before him, and he told her she had to leave, that they had no money for beggars. And terrified, she said, my daddy sent me. And he went, oh, you're the hired girl. Come in. So they immediately put her to work. She started washing dishes, and a couple of days later, she was dragging around two small children almost as big as she was. And the mother of the family was expecting another child and unable to get around, so Sarah was the surrogate mother. She would push a chair up to the sink to wash the dishes. She would help them carry the water.
Mm.
And she slept in a tiny room off the kitchen. And when they caught her eating food, they would stop her. And so she would eat. What we had then was something, no, none of you have ever heard of this. It's called a slop bucket.
I've heard of it.
Okay. It's the leftover food and goods that you mix with the feed and feed to the pigs.
Mm-hmm.
She was punished for eating out of the slop bucket because the pigs needed to eat more. And she stayed with that family and worked. When the children went to school in the fall, she didn't go. When the children came home from school with all of their new things to learn, she was not allowed to share that with them. And then after the baby was born and was a good size, they made her leave.
So I'm picturing Sarah as your grandmother's contemporary telling the story. What did it feel like to listen to someone two generations older than you reflecting? What was happening in your heart as you listened? Or as you read off of the back of the pieces of paper?
Well, we did both. We read, we interviewed. Mm-hmm. The story to come together took about 4 years.
Okay.
And over that time, we spent a lot of time talking.
Okay.
And I really had to put on my journalist hat, and that's very normal, but you remove yourself from the emotion and think about what do I need to know to tell this story.
Okay.
And it's only after you've written it, and frankly, I don't remember all the words, but it's only after you've written it and you stop for a moment and go and think about what that felt like.
Mm-hmm.
And you look at another 5-year-old child and think, would this 5-year-old child that I'm seeing today be able to survive this? That you realize how incredible that she stayed alive and remained positive became.
Now, let me get a hook. And remained positive. That's significant. How did she do that? What did she tell you? How did she maintain or sustain herself?
She said that she always had to think about living and not dying. And she had a mother who was cut from similar cloth.
Mm-hmm.
The mother's story is in the book, and it's almost as unbelievable as hers.
Mm-hmm.
And to give you an example of how she did that,
mm-hmm.
One Christmas, they had a good Christmas. The father was home.
Mm-hmm.
There were several children. They had food, and they had put up a Christmas tree, and they put red bows on all the branches that her mother had made and gathered. So it was a beautiful day. It wasn't snowing, and the mother and the children went for a walk, and when they came back, the father was gone. And the mother, whose name is Carrie, went to look frantically under the board in the cabin where they were living to see if the money she had stashed away was still there, and it was gone. All $300. That was
huge.
That was a year's living. That was everything they needed.
Mm-hmm.
And she knew in that moment that they might starve. They might die. And she also knew that because she was female, she couldn't stay in the house because she had to have a man to rent the house for her. But she gathered her children, and they waited till the next day, and they took down the Christmas tree, and she handed each child a bow. And she said, I want you to remember that we had a good day, that it was a beautiful Christmas, and every time you take this ribbon out, you remember that you can get through this. You remember that there are good things, and take this out when things get bad.
Did Sarah have her bow still?
Yes, Sarah kept her bow.
Wow. Wow. I'm thinking about today, and I'm thinking, of course, it's true. It was a harder life for everybody before, back then. But somehow that harder life seemed to harvest strength, internal strength, and determination. And I'm remembering my grandmother. And, all the things that kept her going in a time that was very difficult in this United States. And I'm remembering her teaching me as a 2 and 3 year old what to say and not to say, what drinking fountain I couldn't drink out of. We would take our walk every day in the sand. She would sweep the sand every morning. And for all I knew, it was a big adventure. She never let me know what we didn't have. She never let me know. So I was, until I got a lot older, believing that that was the life. Because she spent time with me. She loved me. After breakfast, we sat on in the swing and made up stories. And I'm thinking, we had nothing. But we had love and we had each other. So I think there's an intergenerational gift that we've been given, and I think we owe it to our own to continue that. So with the book, do you have any thoughts about what you might do? Do you see it as a play or a movie?
I've always seen this book as a film.
Okay.
Because you would have to, or a multi-part television program.
Mm-hmm.
You really have to see the expansiveness of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And the world in which they lived.
Mm-hmm.
I have 13 episodes written, so I guess I'm thinking television.
I guess you're thinking television. For our listening audience, Amelia has a gift. It's a phenomenal gift. You can give her an idea, and she'll just sit and look at you, and pretty soon she's turned it into a creative, magnificent work. And I've watched her do this, and I'm going, oh, my goodness. But I guess that's why we all have different gifts. Tell me this. This is your grandmother, your mother, handing all this strength to you. What are you doing in terms of legacy to your children, your son and your daughter? How are you creating Mountain Strong in them in today's world?
I think that you do that simply by expressing confidence in them that, yes, you can survive this. And then here's a mechanism to do that. Because my dad would say, somebody always has to be thinking. And so you help them think through the issue and focus on the solution and not focus on being stuck on the problem. And that's essentially the core of any kind of strength. My son has been going through a lot of challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And he and I had a discussion yesterday, in fact, and he said, Mom, I think I can do this.
Oh.
And I said, no, don't think, do.
Yes, yes, yes. That is so important. So we feel good. Yesterday was a good day.
Yes.
For him.
And my daughter, who has been, both of them have worked a lot of years, but she has worked professionally since she was seven.
What was she doing?
She was an actor, mm-hmm. is an actor. But that's an industry in which you could easily be crushed by the rejection. You could easily facing constant denial could take away your positive outlook at any given moment.
Mm-hmm.
And early on, we set the standard that this is not about you as a person. It's about their need to fill
a role.
Mm-hmm. And over the years, I've watched her accept that idea and to grow into it. And now she almost always just shrugs and goes, well, there will be another one. And I watched people not be able to step forward from that.
Yes, I have as well. And I talked to my son yesterday, and lately he's been in a valley, what he's calling his wilderness. He's just working, and he wants a family and to get married, and we're trying to do critical thinking and, you know, creative problem solving. And I sit as a mother, and I feel his pain. And yet, I have to let him grow into the solution. And it is not an easy thing as a mother to do that. And I have two goddaughters who are also adults. And I look at the difference between how my son communicates and how they communicate when they're in crisis. And it seems a little easier for me, maybe because I'm a woman as well, to communicate with my goddaughter spirit to spirit. And my son is a thinker. He's a thinker. So he's processing. And I'm thinking, just let go. You're going to be all right. But I think they need more than words. I think they need prayer. That's what I think. So your daughter is doing very well. She's in
New York City.
Oh, my gosh. And she's how old?
23.
In New York City?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You might want to tell me how she's set up there. How's that working for her?
She's thriving. She has roommates for the first time in her life. And she is learning more and more about herself and what she's willing to accept and not accept from those roommates every day. She is forging forward with auditions. She pays her bills with minor work as a temp in an office.
Mm-hmm.
She found out she hated waitressing, and so that is the iconic role of an out-of-work actor as waitress or waiter.
Right.
And so she said no to that, and she's moving forward.
Will we get to see her anything soon, you think?
If we do, it'll be a nice surprise, because I don't know what she's doing next. I know she had three or four auditions this week, and she's very quick to say, well, I blew that one. That one I did well, but I think they're looking for a different type.
Mm-hmm.
And the third one is, I'm feeling so good about this. Say a prayer.
Okay. Now, you and she speak frequently. I have a sense that you are best friends.
No. I think that she's my daughter.
Okay.
And she's my friend.
Okay.
But I think it's very important to remember that it's not her role to step in and be my best friend.
Yes.
It's her role to be the best daughter and mine to be the best mother and her friend as she grows up.
I like that. I like that. And I'm thinking now, when did mother and I become mm-hmm. best friends? And it wasn't until I was a woman. And by that, I mean I was married and had responsibilities. My sadness, of course, was that I lost her so soon after that relationship was established. Okay, so we know we're thinking of a TV show, a series for the book. What else have you got going?
Well, we have a tiny theater company. It's called a Shoestring Theater Company because my late writing partner and I had developed a whole lot of stories around the culture of Southwest Virginia, and all of them are based in fact. And quite by happenstance, we ended up creating the theater company, and he'd said, well, if this ever gets successful, we'll just do it on a shoestring and let's hope it's attached to a rich man's shoe.
Oh, I like that. I like that a lot.
So far it's not, but we've gained in a lot of riches because we have phenomenal support across the Commonwealth of Virginia. We have a core of actors who I think would follow us anywhere, and they did. They went to Keokey, Virginia. And for those of you who don't know, Virginia does not end at Roanoke. It actually goes well past Lynchburg.
Tell us a little bit about Keokey. What would we see if we were there?
Right now you would see, you would have to go down a winding mountain road past some dying coal mining camps where the houses are stacked up along each side of the road, bounded by a river on one side and train tracks on the other. And once you got to Keokey, you would open into this beautiful, lush, green expanse where there are a few houses, a school, and a gymnasium that have been there well over 100 years. And there are about 600 homes and families who live there. And then if you kept going down the road, you would end up passing the most beautiful lake. It's called Lake Keokey. And photographers work years to get the right lighting on it so they can capture all the beautiful different facets of the colors. And then keep going another mile and you're into Kentucky.
Wow. Let us close our eyes, land on Keokey, and take a break. When we come back, we'll talk more about shoestring. Okay, I'm choosing now to open my eyes. I had them closed. I was in Keokey. I was looking at the lake and all the lush greenery. Tell me, have you ever written about that part of the country, that part of Virginia?
Yes.
Tell me about that.
We always write about that part of Virginia because that is Southwest Virginia. It is on the Kentucky-Tennessee border. It is in the, if you're looking at the map of the Commonwealth, it's in the very far left corner, the tip of the state. Mm-hmm. Entire Southwest Virginia encompasses about 12 counties.
Mm-hmm.
Primary industry has always been coal mining, and that's both to their benefit and their detriment at this point in time, because they never bothered to look up and say, we need another industry.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, because they never bothered to diversify, this is my opinion, they're now faced and have been for a number of years with an eroding economy, the highest poverty rates in the whole Commonwealth and maybe among the highest in the country, huge, huge problems with drugs and addiction,
mm-hmm.
massive health problems.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the most resilient people, the friendliest, the nicest, the most heartfelt people you would ever want to meet.
And I think those kind of people you've written about in a play recently performed in this area. Mm-hmm. What was that called?
We just did our first play. It's called I Ain't Made That Way. And it deals with the idea that there is a bias against people from Southwest Virginia. The tendency is to think of them as hillbillies in overalls with no shoes. Questions get asked frequently. Where's your still? Well, if they had one, they're not telling you. But they don't normally have one these days. They most likely would grow marijuana. But the story of the play is to cut across all of those cultural biases and meet the real people. And at the end of the play, you find that they're not that much different than the rest of the Commonwealth. The play is set in the Blue Star Bar and Grill, which was a real place in Keokey, Virginia. And the community is gathering to celebrate the accomplishment of their favorite son, who is the mine owner's son, and his achievement of getting 2 master's degrees.
And what happens when they get there?
Well, have you ever been to a family reunion?
Yes, yes.
Okay, if you go to a family reunion, you find that there's resentments, there is anticipation of negativity that's going to happen. There is a concern that someone won't get along with someone else, mm-hmm. and that happens at this family gathering in front of the entire town and all the dignitaries from across the Commonwealth of Virginia. And Harlan, who is the central figure, brings with him his college buddy, who doesn't even believe Keokey exists because he's heard all of these tall tales of Keokey, and it's either a revered place on the edge of heaven, or it is some fanciful place that Harlan has made up to entertain his friends from school and to have them fear the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
And so the friend understands at the end of the play that Keoki's just like everywhere else, and so are the people.
Do you think you'll do another play seated in that environment?
We are. We have another play that begins. We're in production right now for next spring. The play is called The Best Doctor in Town, and with each piece that my partner, my late partner, Dink Shackelford, and I did, he was like the best brother I think I've ever had, except for the two I do have. And we wanted to explore the idea of how the isolation of the mountains creates a situation in which people can accept without question what's presented to them as a gift. And in this case, it's medical care. At one time when the mines were running and they were all union mines, we had world-class doctors, world-class medical care that was brought in by the mining companies to keep the miners healthy and their families healthy.
Mm-hmm.
With the deterioration of the industry and the lack of unionization, that's all gone by the wayside because people have no health care. And so framing this story is something called RAM, the Remote Area Medical Clinic, and it comes once a year to the fairgrounds in the county, and you will see 5,000 to 6,000 people hobbling in, rolling in wheelchairs, some waiting in their cars for as much as 3 days for care from volunteer doctors, volunteer dentists, volunteer eye doctors, and a whole host of health practitioners. And they will treat about a third of that number over the weekend for free. That's followed up during the year by something called the Health Wagon. Both of these have been featured multiple times in international media.
Mm-hmm.
And the Health Wagon goes door to door and sets up shop in communities, and people come there for health care throughout the year. So what Dink and I wanted to accomplish with this story was to explore that, explain what that is,
mm-hmm.
and then talk about the need for people to determine health care for themselves. So The Best Doctor in Town depicts a doctor who has come to town through what we call RAM, R-A-M there,
mm-hmm.
and he stays, and he creates community health satellite clinics, and he attracts the best and the brightest of young interns, and he has worked to get their student loans reduced or taken away if they agree to stay and work as doctors later on. The only problem is our good doctor may be a serial killer.
Oh, my goodness. I love it. I absolutely love it. Now, I'm sitting here, and I'm talking to the Amelia Townsend of today. She is a visionary. She is encouraging. She has founded a theater company. I did have one question before we go on. How do you see, because you keep talking about the differences, say, between Fairfax County and Southwest Virginia, do you see the arts and a play like you've been producing being effective in teaching diversity within our schools, the arts, perhaps?
Yes, I do, because I think that the arts is where we can all connect mm-hmm. without bias. And
yes, that's what I wanted to get to, yeah.
And without any sort of filter.
Mm-hmm.
For example, our music director is a young man who has a degree in old-time music from East Tennessee State University. He teaches a class called Mountain Music, and children come from all over the place, all over the summer, to take his class. Well, that's grown this year. I think there were over 70 kids in class designed for 15. And the children here in Fairfax and the young musicians here in Fairfax would never have known or heard of our music. And so there's this huge opportunity to connect not only the musicians through the art of music, but let's say we connect artists through drawing or mm-hmm. photography or mm-hmm. taking that beautiful picture of Lake Keoki and sharing that with their audiences here. Or maybe there's the opportunity to do the reverse
mm-hmm.
where the children in Southwest Virginia get to see what it's like to live in a world that has seemingly endless resources for art.
Yes, yes. I'm thinking, too, as you're talking, technology may be able to facilitate that exchange, and particularly in the schools now, they have that ability to do remote connections. As you were talking, I was thinking what I know of Fairfax County and the demographics here, and then I was thinking about how you described the Keoki place. These kids probably don't even know that kind of place exists, and vice versa. So that's why I immediately went to, how do we begin to share at an early enough age, like you said, through the arts, eliminating bias, allowing humor and a few other things to make it happen and have community be built between two diverse populations?
I think one of the ways you do that is just simply through story.
Uh-huh.
The children here and there come from diverse backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
But they also have a different set of cultural markers,
okay,
that decide who they are,
uh-huh,
in terms of how they're raised, how they're grown up. And so one of the ideas that when he was alive, Dink and I had,
mm-hmm,
was to connect with technology like a web series or a, mm-hmm, Skype series, and have the children create their own cultural stories, then share it with the others across the Commonwealth, and then figure out a way so they could talk among themselves about what the differences and the similarities are.
I love that. I was, you know, I have a children's product and a dream. And one of the things I wanted to do was to do global story painting. So, mm-hmm, a child here may start the story, it's passed on and on, so the cultures will be represented in what they contribute as the story goes around the world. I'm just really believing that the children are our future and that they can solve many problems if we give them the chance. But like I started to say before I interrupted myself, I'm listening to you as Amelia today, who represents a journey. And I'd like for you, as I ask each of my guests to do, to read your letter to a younger Amelia, and what I've discovered is through that letter, there are revelations of the foundation of your journey. And I'd like for you to share that now, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay. Well, since you wanted a younger self, I wrote it yesterday.
This is yesterday's Amelia?
Yeah, probably. No, I was figuring I was probably 12. 13.
Okay. Okay, good.
Okay, so hello, kid. I know you won't believe this now, but your daddy really is right. He says this all the time. I will never tell you anything to hurt you. And here is a true gauge for right and wrong. Remember that day you were standing in your papa's yard and he was sitting on the porch, rocking back and forth facing you? You had scuffed up your brand new saddle Oxfords that he had ordered from Bailey Isaac's store back home in Big Stone Gap. Tried to hide the scuff marks, but of course he'd already seen them and called you to him to wipe away the black marks with his old handkerchief. You asked him not to tell your mother. He chuckled and he moved his pipe away from his face. And he shook his head and he said, "You must never do anything you're afraid to go home and tell your mother." You know what? He's right too. And you're going to save yourself a lot of headaches and heartaches if you will just take the advice to at face value and do exactly what they say. They're smart, they're caring, and they're wise beyond your years. I know it's impossible to accept that, and likely you won't. Like that day a few years from now when your mother tries to talk you into staying home and not moving to the city with roommates, or when your uncles tell you to go home and help your mother. They're right, too. They all have one thing in common, and they're willing to risk your anger by sharing it. They want you to succeed, to be happy, and to do so with as little pain and heartache as possible. So I'll just put it this way. Remember when you saw your sisters getting into trouble for lying to your parents, and you decided it was just, well, too much work to lie, and the double consequences were way too heavy? Remember that now. Do what your mother says and don't argue with her. Oh, and Disney does have real jobs for writers. and you don't have to wear a mouse costume to work there. The end.
Awesome. Awesome. I see that little girl. I see her daddy, and I see her scuffed shoes. There is nothing like memories. Nothing like memories to keep us going. And that was a sweet one. I want to say thank you so much for you sharing. I think a spirit-to-spirit conversation was beautiful. Each week, I try to leave each of our listeners, all of our listeners, with a little encouragement, just in case. I call it a spiritual doggy bag to get you over any moment of doubt, anger, frustration, loneliness. When you feel tired of being tired, are you saying to yourself, is this all there is? Well, when you're in this mood, I want you to think about something. The past and the future really don't exist. Now is the moment. The past is just a memory. The future is not mental projection. You can choose to dwell back in the past for the learning and the joyous reflection. You can choose to dwell in the future for visualization and practical planning. However, any time your awareness floats away to the past or the future, frequently for negative purposes, you are suffocating your ability to thrive in the only moments that you have, the now. Past and future literally do not exist. Now, feel the freedom in this truth. Also, your calling in life is to express fully who you really are. The world will never see another human being like you. There is no one on the face of this planet that has what you have. Your uniqueness in every respect is your gift. Life asks one thing of you, to be the full expression of yourself so that you can leave your unique imprint on all those you encounter and upon the world. Never underestimate the power of your energy and how it ripples outward to affect everything and everyone around you. If you are your full, authentic self, honor your intuition and act upon your inspirations. I'm going to ask Mr. Tony Walker to play piano for us on our theme song as we say, until next time. I want you to understand that I am here for you. I want you to understand that you're worthy. You are never, ever alone. You are not your circumstances. Nothing has happened to you in your life that will be wasted. You have everything within you you need to thrive. I want you to refuse to be refused. Your voice has saved you. I am here and I am listening. Listen, I want you to tell me how I did. I want you to write me at Tyra@TyraGarlington.com. In the meantime, don't forget you're listening to Radio Fairfax in Fairfax, Virginia. And this is Frankly Speaking with Tyra G. I want y'all to make the best of this week. Remember, you're blessed, and I love you.